Amikdash. I want to move over now to the Kinav Zuchor Asher Asar Tzar Bifnim, which is on page 111 in the Rosenfeld, 226 in the Art Scroll, and 361 in the Koren. And this is a descriptive kinah. It's about the, it reflects the Gemara in Masechet Gittin, which talks about when Titus went into the Beit HaMikdash and how he defiled it. Well, I think we've actually examined some of those themes in previous years. So what I want to do is today to look at the Gemara in Masechet Gittin, the story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. Very, very famous account of how the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash came around. We've got it on page 8 in the handout. Very grateful to Ariel Grossman and our friends at Koren in Yerushalayim for providing us with the Koren text here. And we're going to go through, we'll go through the Gemara in the English from the Koren. So we're about halfway down the page there on page 8. Where the Gemara says, Jerusalem was destroyed on account of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. The place known as the King's Mountain was destroyed on account of a rooster and a hen, and the city of Beta was destroyed on account of a shaft from a chariot. So we've got the famous story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. Let's read through the story. Jerusalem was destroyed on account of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. That is, there was a certain man whose friend was named Kamtza, and whose enemy was named Bar Kamtza. Sounds a bit like a joke, but it's anything but a joke. He once made a large feast and said to his servant, "Go and bring me my friend Kamtza." The servant went and mistakenly brought him his enemy Bar Kamtza. It sometimes happens, you know, in shuls. You know, so we're going to give Mufti Yona to Mr. Goldberg, and they give Mufti Yona to Mr. Greenberg, you know, by mistake, and it's totally the wrong person. We once had it with something we were doing in the shul. We had somebody's name, and the person in charge got the two people with the same name muddled up, and we ended up with the wrong person doing what we hoped that somebody else would do really, really well. So Ata Ashkechei, the man who was hosting the feast, came and found Bar Kamtza sitting at the feast. The host said to Bar Kamtza, "That man is the enemy of that man." So this is a euphemistic way of saying it. Ho gavra baldvavad ho gavra, meaning, it's speaking of in the third, but meaning that you're my enemy, I hate you. What are you doing here at my suitor? What then do you want here? Arise and leave. Bar Kamtza said to him, "Listen, since I've already come, let me stay and I will give you money for whatever I eat and drink. Just do not embarrass me by sending me out." So Bar Kamtza said, "You know what, I'm here already. I've already got talking to the people next to me. I'll pay you for my meal. I don't mind about it. Just let me stay here." Those said to him, "No, you must leave. You really didn't want him there." Bar Kamtza said to him, "I'll give you money for half the feast. You can't do better than this. I'll pay for half of it. Just do not send me away." Those said to him, "No, you must leave." Bar Kamtza then said to him, "I will give you money for the entire feast. Just let me say, I'll pay the whole for the whole lot. I'll upgrade it, Tony Page." The host said to him, "No, you must leave." Finally, the host took Bar Kamtza by his hand, stood him up, and took him out. After having been cast out from the feast, Bar Kamtza said to himself, "Hoil v'habu yatvei rabbanan v'lo machu day, shva mina kanichalahu. Since the sages were sitting here and did not protest the actions of the host, or they though saw how he humiliated me, learn from it that they were content with what he did." So just to pause for one moment here, because this is a very important notion. Quite often we find ourselves in situations where something's happening that we don't really approve of. But for all sorts of reasons, socially, we don't like to say anything. We'll keep quiet about it. Keeping quiet about things, as we're going to see, is what brings around the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. We don't want, the sages didn't want to say to the host, you're behaving unreasonably. They might have felt it, they didn't want to say anything, because he was their host. Sometimes you're at a Shabbat meal or something like that, and your host tells you something they've done, it's a shocking thing. And I was once at a Shabbat meal. I regret not saying anything, you know, to this day. As I was once at a Shabbat meal, and somebody around the table, they had a son in his 20s, and he was saying that he was going on an Aish trip to New York for, I think, £100. You had to be not frum. So he told them that he's not frum, because it was a good way of getting an Aish trip to New York for £100. I thought that was Mamish Geneva. I was shocked by it. I didn't say anything because, you know, we were guests in somebody's house. It wasn't nice to say anything. I'm ashamed of myself for not saying anything. I should have said something. This is, you know, part of the notion, you know, we read about in yesterday's Haftarah and today's Haftarah. Shiftu Mishpat, you know, we should, you know, the Beit HaMikdash isn't yet rebuilt because we're not living just lives. So this is what's happened here. Nobody liked to say anything to their host, because, you know, it was a really nice meal and it was embarrassing for them. So they let something terrible happen. Learn from it, they were content with what he did. I will therefore go and inform against them to the king. He went and said to the emperor, the Jews have rebelled against you. The emperor said to him, who says that this is the case? My counselor said to him, go and test them. Send them an offering to be brought in honour of the government and see whether they'll sacrifice it. So the emperor went and sent with him a choice 3-year-old calf. While Baal Kamsa was coming with the calf to the temple, Shada Beimuma Benifsfatayim, he put a blemish on the calf's upper lip, and some say a blemish on its eyelids, a place where, according to us, so as far as we're concerned, we'll regard it as a Baal Mum, but according to them, it's not a Baal Mum. So they couldn't understand why it wasn't going to be offered up. Therefore, when Baal Kamsa brought the animal to the temple, the priest would not sacrifice it on the altar since it was blemished. They also could not explain this satisfactorily to the Gentile authorities, who did not consider it to be blemished. The blemish notwithstanding, the sages sought to sacrifice the animal as an offering due to the imperative to maintain peace with the government. Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulas said to them, if the priests do that, then people will say that blemished animals may be sacrificed as offerings on the altar. The sages said, if we do not sacrifice it, then we must prevent Baal Kamsa from importing this to the emperor. The sages thought to kill him, so that would not go and speak against them. Rabbi Zacharias said to them, if you kill him, people will say that one who makes a blemish on a sacrificial animal is to be killed. So as a result, they did nothing. Baal Kamsa's slander was accepted by the authorities. Consequently, the war between the Jews and the Romans began. And Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Anve Tanu Toshe Rabbi Zacharias ben Avkulas, Hechariva et Beitenu. The excessive humility of Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulas destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. The Sarfa et Hechaleinu burned the sanctuary. Vigli Tanu Me'artzenu. And exiled us from our land. So it's an interesting question. You know, how we're saying that they were talking here about the Anvatanu Torsha Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulas. What way was he being an Anvatan? In what way was he being so humble? It seems that you know, he wasn't. You know, he was just citing the halacha. So we'll see in a little bit from Rav Amital's Zichron Olivracha. Rav Amital said, no, he could have been powerful. He could have made a horat shah. He said, no, I'm not big enough to make a horat shah. If we look at the passage in the parallel passage in the Medrash Rabbah, actually Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulas takes a different role. It's not at the end, but Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulas was one of the people who was at the Suda. And he could have said to the host, stop treating Baal Kamsa like that, but he didn't. And because he didn't say anything to the host, he was too nice to the host. It's not for me to get involved. So because he felt it wasn't for him to get involved, this led to everything here happening. So if you lost the storyline a little bit, I've got on page 13, you've got the tribe cartoon for it. That was for people who get bored today, so at least you can read the cartoon. But we'll carry on with trying to understand what was the Anvatanu Tor, the excessive humility of Rabbi Zacharia ben of Kulas. So the Maharat Chayat says that he simply thought that he wasn't up to the job. And sometimes you've got to realise that when nobody else is taking a stand on something, you've got to take the stand on something. And that's what Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulas was missing. Look at comments of Moriv Rabbi Harav Amital on page 11. So he says that the rabbis felt that the animal, although invalid for sacrifice, should be offered nonetheless due to the potential danger to life should the emperor's anger be aroused. Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulis opposed the idea, fearing that people will mistakenly think that animals with defects may be offered on the altar. The next suggestion was to kill Barkamp so that he would discontinue spreading false rumours that threatened the Jews. Once again, Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulis expressed his disapproval. People will say that one who inflicts a wound on a sacrificial animal is liable for the death penalty. This inaction led to the fruition of Barkamp's plan and ultimately the destruction of the city. This prompted Rabbi Yochanan to issue this chilling statement about Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulis. The modesty of Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulis destroyed our house, burnt our temple, and exiled us from our land. The same declamation that had been made about the brutal Roman government is now applied to a scholarly rabbi who had achieved considerable stature. So we're saying it wasn't the Romans who destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, it was Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulis. But he simply lacked the ability to reach a conclusive decision. When the need arises to decide, to adopt a definitive approach, a leader who lacks this capability brings about calamity. And of course, we're all leaders in our own particular ways. There could have been Horat Shah. It would have been perfectly reasonable for the sages to decide in that instance that either the animal should be offered up on the Mizbeach, or that Bar Kamsa should be put to death. You're allowed in extreme cases to do things like that. But Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulis, he was one of these people that hummed and hawing about it. Oh, I'm not really sure if we should. Not really sure, you know, who are we to do this? Oh, maybe greater people than us. And sometimes you've got to realize that Makom She'ein Ish, Hishtadel Liyot Ish, when nobody else is doing what needs to be done, you need to do it. And if you don't, so you've got this sense of modesty about you, then terrible things can come about. And I'd say this applies, you know, in so many aspects of our lives. This is, an enormous example of how the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed as a result. And there are so many things in our lives where, you know, really we ought to do something. But for whatever reason, we didn't speak up and do something about it. And the wrong conclusion comes to it. It can be in our families, it can be in our social circles. I think it's worth, you know, repeating that notion that, you know, in our social circles sometimes, you know, people behave in ways which aren't upright, which aren't honest, which aren't moral. And we don't like to say something about it. It makes us feel uncomfortable. Sometimes we have to feel uncomfortable and we have to make a decision about what needs to be done. Sometimes, a person is in a difficult situation. We need that Horat Shah to go beyond our Dalet Amot and to help that person. Rav Amital also addresses a really interesting question. We said at the beginning of the Gemara, we said, why was the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed? Akamtsa uvar kamtsa charuv Yerushalayim. Beit HaMikdash was destroyed because of Kamtsa and Bar Kamtsa. So I understand what Bar Kamtsa had to do with it. It's not really clear to me that it was Bar Kamtsa's fault. Maybe Bar Kamtsa, you know, what, should he have just got up quietly and gone? I don't know. But we can see how Bar Kamtsa was involved. Kamtsa wasn't involved at all. Kamtsa didn't even get his invitation to the Suda. He was at home, watching daytime TV or at Lord's watching the cricket. He didn't know this Suda was taking place. And nevertheless, Kamtsa is being blamed along with Bar Kamtsa for the destruction. It should have been, we're not saying that, you know, why doesn't the Gemara start off by saying it was Bar Avkulis, and it was Zacharia ben Avkulis whose fault it was. Why don't we say at all that it was the Baal HaSuda's fault, that it was his fault, that he was trying to kick this person out? We're laying the blame on one person who was a victim of the situation and the other person who wasn't even there. So Rav Amital has a wonderful answer to this question. The Gemara claims that because of Bar Kamsa and Kamsa, Jerusalem was destroyed. Kamsa too bears responsibility for the city's downfall, despite the fact that he played no role whatsoever in the story. Bar Kamsa mistakenly received Kamsa's invitation to a celebration and was then shamefully expelled when he attended. But Kamsa, the intended recipient of the invitation, was not involved at all. A closer analysis of this Gemara will help clarify this anomaly. The Gemara states that Kamsa's friend made a party. This wasn't a wedding or some other festivity of religious significance. It was a party for an enclosed, self-contained clique, characteristic of a splintered society. This group, to which Kamsa belonged, and from which Bar Kamsa was publicly rejected, resembles an egrof kamutz, a closed fist. Right, a kmitza, we talk about the mitzvah of kmitza in the Beit HaMikdash. It's where you take a handful of the mincha, of the flour. So kamutz means like to grasp something in your hand, which safely protects everyone within, but which is impossible to penetrate or gain entry into. Indeed, this was the sin of Kamsa, his very membership in such an exclusive clique. The Rambam asks in his Guide to the Perplexed, why the Torah never specifies Yerushalayim explicitly, instead only alludes to the place that God will choose. His first two answers relate to the potential reaction of the other nations. If they had learned of the site of the temple in advance, they would have immediately either concentrated their forces there or just destroyed the chosen city, since their war with Israel is primarily a cultural struggle. The third answer, though, relates to the potential reaction of Bnei Israel themselves. Were they to have known which city was chosen as the site of the temple, the tribes would begin fighting with one another, each demanding that the city be included in their region. Jerusalem, the symbol of national unity, has no right to exist if it causes friction and hatred among the Jewish people. And we say, the Gemara says, Yerushalayim lo nitchalkal ha-shvatim. The city of Yerushalayim wasn't divided amongst the shvatim. All everywhere else in Eretz Israel was divided, was the territory of a particular shevet. That wasn't the case with Yerushalayim. It was there for everybody. And that, Rav Amital, I think, is suggesting, is the lesson of the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, and part of the whole notion of Churban HaBayit. Sense of Yerushalayim isn't only for certain people, and that we can drive other people out of there. It's an area which is for everybody. And this notion of the Egrof Kamutz, the exclusive society that we have, again, this is something which, you know, does impact on our lives, and I think we need to think about on a day like Tisha B'Av. We talk about the notion of Sinat Chinam. You know, what is Sinat Chinam? So I don't know exactly what Sinat Chinam is, but, you know, the notion that, you know, I'll just hate somebody for no reason whatsoever. You know, lots of people dislike other people, and sometimes, unfortunately, we hate other people. But there's usually a reason why we hate them. It might be a good reason, it might be a bad reason. But it's not Chinam, it's not for no reason whatsoever. However, it might be that what is Sinat Chinam? Sinat Chinam is where I create a society where somebody else doesn't feel welcome. You see it sometimes, you know, not talking particularly about our shul, any shul you go to, you know, at the Kiddush. You see people standing around in groups and somebody doesn't feel quite comfortable, you know, wants to join in the conversation, and they can feel they're being, you know, cold-shouldered and they're not welcome, you know, to sit there. Or you have a communal sudash lishit or something like that, and you've got a group of people, they're sitting there, they're having their conversation, and somebody else doesn't really know people, you know, they're sitting on the edge, they don't really feel welcome to that group. That is the group that Rav Amital is talking about, the Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, an exclusive society. You're not welcome to be part of it. Of course, we can all have, you know, invite our friends into our houses. So I can do what I want with my friends. But if it's in the public sphere, which this seemed to be, you know, this was a party that everybody knew about. Everybody knew about, except the people who weren't invited to it. Now, then you've got to be more careful about it. Somebody told me a while back, I'm saying this, Lishvach, he was making a Sheva Brachot and wanted to do it Shabbat afternoon in the shul, and decided, you know what, they'll just invite, you know, the whole community. He wasn't the rabbi of the shul, but, you know, anybody who wants to come to Sheva Brachot in the shul Shabbat afternoon is welcome. Why? Because it was going to be taking place in the shul. Didn't want to give out invitations that some people would feel invited and some people wouldn't feel invited. Somebody might show up for Mincha and, okay, they'll tell, yeah, come and join us, but, you know, they feel I'm not really part of it. You know, when you're doing something in that context, you either invite everybody or you don't do it. If I'm having Shabbat lunch in my house, I can invite who I want. But if I'm doing something which is somewhat public, then I've got to be sensitive to it. And the same is true, you know, with who we sit next to at Sudash and Shit, who we talk to at Kiddush, and all these sorts of things. Because otherwise, we reach a situation of Sinat Chinam, of people feeling hated for no reason. They don't understand why they're not part of the group. And of course the answer is chinam. There is no reason why they're not part of the group, just because the people in the group, they don't want the other person to be part of it. And if there's anything we take away from Tisha B'Av, then maybe this should be one of the lessons, that you know, just to be a bit more welcoming to the person who comes into shul, to the person who sits next to us, the person at the kiddush who doesn't seem to be talking to anybody, who feels like an outsider, to give them the opportunity to feel like an insider. So let's continue with Zuchor Asher Asar Bifnim, page 111 in the Rosenfeld, 226 in the Art Scroll, 361 in the Koran.